Let me invite you to open back to Genesis chapter 37. And we're going to look at the beginning account here that deals with Joseph in the next few minutes. Joseph is almost unique among Bible characters. Sometimes you'll see lists of great men and women of the Bible. And in children's classes especially, you'll go through and you'll study all these Old Testament characters. And Joseph is one of the few Bible characters in which there are no major flaws ever recorded in his life. That's not true of Noah. It's not true of Moses. It's not true of Abraham or Isaac or Jacob. It's not even true of the great King David. They all had their feet of clay. But when we come to Joseph's story, it's just remarkable. That young man seemed to never take a major misstep. He always was facing toward God and doing the right thing and making the wisest decisions. And it's just amazing. His whole life can be summed up in a single word: faithful. Joseph was faithful. When life was hard, Joseph was faithful. When life was good and he was on top of his game, he was faithful. When his life was threatened, he was faithful. When he was living in absolute security, he was faithful. And I want us to understand, when we talk about faithfulness, all too often we tend to define that in a very, very narrow way. If someone asks, you know, is so-and-so a faithful Christian? We'll answer by saying, oh yeah, they're there on Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday night. And that all too often becomes our standard for faithfulness. Are they good church attenders? Folks, faithfulness is much bigger than that. It's our relationship with God. It touches every area of our life, how we conduct our lives around people when we're not at church, and how we deal with our finances, how we spend our time. Now, it will surely impact what we do in our gathering at assembly times, but it's much bigger than that. It's a whole approach to life that is centered on God in pleasing and honoring Him. Joseph's life was one long roller coaster ride, and through every twist and turn, he demonstrated faithfulness to God. Now, I want to begin by asking this question of all of you. How many of you grew up in a perfect family? You can raise your hands. A lot of us grew up in great families. I grew up in a good Christian family. But I've never yet seen a perfect family. I don't think it exists, because families are made up of humans, and humans are sinners, and there is no perfect family. One of the things that I do when I do my pre-marriage counseling with couples, we talk about the next generation and what's been handed to them, and I always ask them, it's a hard question to ask, I ask them, what is it that you most admire about your parents and what they've given you? And they're always quick to say some glowing things about their father and their mother and things that have been handed them. But then I always ask them this. I say, what is one thing that you do not want to pass on to your children, should God bless you with children? And they have to pause and think a little bit. And I say, the reason I ask that is because there is no perfect family, and our goal is to improve in every generation. And there are some things that, as good as my family was, I didn't necessarily want to pass on to my children. And so I tried to do better. And I hope that they, in turn, will reject the things that they have seen in me that are not as good as they ought to be, the flaws that I have, and that they will do a better job in their generation with their children, and that we continue to grow generationally as families. I think you're going to be encouraged by the example of Joseph that we're going to see tonight. He grew up in a less than perfect family. I think it would probably be more accurate to say that Joseph grew up in a troubled family. In fact, before we're done looking at his family of origin, I think we would probably all be willing to agree that Joseph grew up in a dysfunctional family. It was a mess. It was terrible. I never realized how bad it was until I went back and began to look at it, thinking in terms of modern families today. Yet even in this family that was an absolute mess, somehow, some way, Joseph remained faithful to God. And I'm so encouraged when I see people who come out of disaster situations and yet who somehow keep their eye on Jesus and come through it all stronger and better. Back in Genesis chapter 32, and you don't necessarily have to turn back there, you can if you like, we read the story of how Joseph's parents met. I would imagine if I ask any one of you here tonight, how did your parents meet? You could probably tell me the story. You've heard them tell that story. I've heard my parents tell the story of how they first met. Well, if Joseph was here and we said, Joseph, how did your parents meet? He would have said, well, it started a long time ago when my dad cheated his twin brother out of the family inheritance, and he had to run for his life because my Uncle Esau was about to kill my dad, and so he ran, and he went to my Uncle Laban's house, and while he was there with Uncle Laban, he met and fell in love with his cousin, Rachel, and worked out an arrangement so that if he worked 7 years, Uncle Laban would let him marry cousin Rachel. Now, that doesn't sound good, does it? That's the start of the whole process. And so he worked for 7 years, and he married Rachel. No, he didn't. He would marry Rachel. He almost married Rachel. He thought he was marrying Rachel. Their wedding took place, but the problem was that Uncle Laban switched the brides. And he gave Jacob the other sister. Now, in the Bible, Rachel is described as a beauty. She must have been a beauty. She's described as beautiful in form. Must have had a beautiful figure. Beautiful young lady. Jacob was madly in love with her. And then it describes her older sister. Her name was Leah. And the nicest thing that could be said about her was that she had weak eyes. Now, I don't know what that means about the rest of her, but if that's the nicest part of her, that was that she had weak eyes, she must not have had many dates. Leah, though, was the one that was secretly substituted on the day of the wedding. And they wore heavy veils, and so when this girl was brought in and when they did their vows or whatever was done, Jacob thought he was marrying Rachel when in fact he was marrying Leah. And they stayed there on the family compound for their honeymoon night. They were ushered into a dark bedchamber. It wasn't until the next morning when Jacob woke up and looked there at the one beside him in the bed that he realized that she didn't look very much like Rachel. Maybe Jacob's mother had warned him, you know, when women wake up in the morning, they don't always look as good as they did the night before without makeup. But after examining her carefully, he thought, what has happened? That's not my wife. And he bolted out of the bedchamber and he went in furious to his Uncle Laban, now his father-in-law, and protested vehemently. And Laban responded by saying, did I forget to tell you that here in this part of the country, we always have to marry off our oldest daughter first before we can marry the second one? And Leah is the older sister. But I tell you, Jacob, if you work 7 more years, I'll let you marry Rachel. Well, he was over the barrel. So he had no choice. He worked, and the text says that those years just sped by because the prospect of finally being able to marry the one he really loved was so sweet. So he worked 7 years. They got married, and you can only imagine what that must have been like in that home. Rachel, who was loved, and Leah, who just had to be thrown into the bargain. Can you imagine the tension in that home with a situation like that between these two? And then the problems really began because Leah produced the first child and the second child and the third child and the fourth child. Four boys, all born to Leah of the weak eyes. And Rachel couldn't have any children. She prayed for them, longed for them. Jacob longed for children from her, but no children from her. So Rachel proposed that she would give her handmaid, her name was Bilhah, and she said, Bilhah, you're going to become my husband's concubine. And she sent her concubine into Jacob, and Jacob agreed with that arrangement, because under that arrangement, any children that were born to the handmaid actually became the child of the owner of the handmaid. So those would be Rachel's children. So Rachel sends Bilhah in, and Bilhah has children. Now that was the same arrangement that Grandpa Abraham and Grandma Sarah had made with Hagar. Let me just tell you, parents, what you do in your generation will have consequences for generations to come. Abraham made a bad choice when he agreed to that deal back with Hagar, and it has created worldwide problems down to our present day. And Jacob was quick to adopt the same procedure of his granddaddy, and it would cause tremendous problems in his home. So this new concubine of Rachel's, Bilhah, she begins to have children. In fact, she has two boys. And Leah, of the weak eyes, has not produced any more children. So she says, well, if Rachel can give Jacob her handmaid, I can give Jacob my handmaid. So she gets Zilpah, and she says, Zilpah, you're about to become Jacob's concubine. And so she sends Zilpah in. And Zilpah begins to have children. She has a couple of boys. Now, you just think of this situation in the competitive nature and the rivalry and the feuding that must have gone on with all of these people and all of those babies there in that household. You know, sometimes we think that it can be very difficult for children to go through a divorce, and it is. And we think that there are special challenges out there for blended family, and that there are. But can you imagine what it would have been like with four wives and children from all of these wives, except from the one wife that Jacob loves the most, Rachel, and she can't have any children? Finally, God opened Rachel's womb. He blessed her. And she became pregnant. And she had a baby. And she named that baby Joseph. Now, that's the family that Joseph was born into. It was only a few years later, Joseph couldn't have been very old, when there was a huge family squabble. And it got nasty. It got ugly. It was between his daddy and his granddaddy, or the father-in-law of Jacob. And so Uncle Laban, father-in-law Laban, he's both titles now, he's at odds with Joseph and Rachel. And so in the middle of the night, Joseph says, I've had enough. So he gathers all of his livestock. He gets all four wives, all of those kids. And in the middle of the night, they are gone. Well, his father-in-law chases him down and accuses him of stealing some of his possessions, his household idols, and they have another big fuss and feud. Eventually, they work it out, and they go their separate ways. And off goes Jacob and his four wives and all of those kids, and they move to a whole new country. And here is little Joseph, drug along. And you just imagine, here he's got to go to a brand new school in a brand new country, and he's got this crazy family, and all these older half-brothers that hate his guts, because he's the child of the favorite wife. And no sooner do they settle there than his mother gets pregnant again, and has a little baby boy that she was going to call Benjamin, but his mother dies. And now here little Joseph is, his mother's dead. He is now governed by these three feuding stepmothers in this home with older brothers that don't like him at all. And then his dad does the worst thing he could do. You could almost forgive Jacob for the grief he was going through on losing his favorite wife, Rachel. But this mistake of Jacob's proved fatal. Look in chapter 37, down in verses 3 and 4. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. On top of everything else, Jacob places this burden on Joseph. And I hope that as parents, that we will never, ever, ever, ever show favoritism. One child above another. Give special treatment and special privileges to one child. Now, you can't treat every child exactly alike because circumstances demand it, but you can be fair in your distribution of love. There is nothing that will cause children to hate one another any more than a parent picking out a favorite child and playing favorites with those children. It's like those two little girls who started kindergarten. And they were from the same family and they were the same age. They weren't twins. The teacher asked, she said, "Is your sister here at school?" She said, "Yeah, she's in the other kindergarten class across the hall." She says, "We're the same age, but it's because one of us is adopted, but we never can remember which one it is." Those are parents that treated those girls without any favoritism. The only thing that is ever said about Joseph that might be regarded as a negative kind of a thing is that he said things about his brothers and he said things in front of his brothers that he probably should not have said. Now, Joseph may have just been naive or he may have been a little bit arrogant. It's hard to tell from the text which it was. But he said some things that he should not have said. And so I want to just look here at two glaring mistakes Joseph made that would get him into really hot water with his brothers. Look in chapter 37, verse 2. It says, "Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them." Everybody hates a tattletale. He goes out, and I don't know whether those brothers of his were loafing on the job or whether they were doing something they shouldn't be doing, but he goes back and hightails it to Dad and gives his dad a bad report about his brothers. Now, you know the kind of response that's going to elicit from those boys. They already think very poorly of Joseph. And now the favorite child goes and spreads a bad story about them to their dad. Not only that, the second mistake he made was he bragged to the wrong people. He bragged about himself to his brothers. He had that beautiful coat, and he probably just wore it all the time. And every time they saw him in that coat, it just made them furious because that was evidence, sure, that he was the favorite of the children. But look what he did. Look in 37, down in verse 5 and following. "Joseph had a dream. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, 'Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it.'" How do you boys like that dream? You can imagine that they were not amused by hearing the recitation of that dream. His brothers said to him in verse 8, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. Listen, he said, I had another dream, and this time the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. Well, even old Jacob said, son, that's enough. No more telling those kind of dreams. And he put a stop to Joseph doing that. Now, we know how that affects people. Do any of you have a brother or a sister or maybe a brother-in-law or a sister-in-law who loves to tell you how well they're doing, how much money they're making, and the nice car they drive, and the expensive vacations they go on, and about their new cabin they just bought down at the lake, and they love to tell you how good they're doing, and it's not much fun being around a brother-in-law or sister-in-law or family member that's always throwing that in your face. And Joseph was always throwing it in his brother's face. There are times when folks just need to keep their mouths closed, and Joseph should have kept those things to himself. Now, through all of the difficulty that Joseph must have faced in growing up in a family like that, there is never one indication in a fairly detailed story, never one indication that he did not consistently maintain a strong faith in God. I'll close with just two truths. The first truth is this: it is difficult to be faithful to God if you grew up in a dysfunctional family. It's difficult because we often look at our earthly fathers, and that's the image we have of our heavenly Father. And it's hard to be faithful to the God in heaven when you've not had love and grace modeled to you in your own physical family. And I know some of you did grow up in dysfunctional families, in divided families, in abusive families, in unspiritual families. But the good news is that it can be done. You can be faithful even when you grow up in a less than ideal family. Joseph would come out of that mess and he would become the prime minister of all of Egypt. Through it all, he would maintain an unwavering faith in God. He would one day have two little boys of his own, Ephraim and Manasseh. And I suspect that Joseph did a better job with his family than was done for him. I hope we can find encouragement in this new series as we look over these next Sunday nights at the way in which Joseph demonstrated faithfulness in every situation that he was in. I know some of you have made a decision somewhere in the past that you're going to change your life. And in doing that, you are changing the very course of your family as it moves forward through time and space. There is no greater motivation and no greater ability to affect change than the power that God gives to His children. And because of that, we can change the course of history. We can break the chains that maybe have gone on for generations in a family. And so tonight, we're going to sing an invitation song. And if there's anyone here who needs to turn to God to make the changes that we all long to make as we pass faith on to the next generation, we want to invite you to come now. If you need prayer, we invite you also to come now as we stand and sing.